Hi everyone, and thanks for joining us on Lid Radio Podcast. I am Martin Liu, and today I'm joined by Nicholas Yanni and Amy Elizabeth Fox, authors of Leading in Chaos, a clarion call to a new future from two pioneers in leadership development and transformational change. Nicholas Yanni has spent over 25 years guiding CEOs and senior teams worldwide and teaching at leading business schools. And his book, Leader as Healer, won the UK Business Book of the Year in 2023. Amy Elizabeth Fox has spent 20 years facilitating transformational programs for senior leaders in Fortune 500 and professional service firms. She is the co-founder and CEO of Mobius Executive Leadership. Leading in Chaos is based on the author's mutual recognition of the unique demands the world faces today. These fast-changing, uncertain times call for leaders to develop new capacities of consciousness and to view leadership as a sacred vocation, to become a blessing in the world through presence, coherence, and deep human connection. Well, welcome Amy and Nicholas to Lid Radio. It's a pleasure to be talking to you both about your new book, Leading in Chaos. So the first question I have is for both of you, and I hope it's a relatively straightforward one. Why did you decide to write Leading in Chaos? Perhaps, Amy, you could start with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to say is that Nicholas and I have been traveling together for close to 20 years, working together and following each other's thought leadership in the domain of executive development. And when we were speaking to each other last summer, we discovered that we were seeing very common phenomena in the leadership programs that we were running and in the coaching we were doing with senior leaders, which is to say people were feeling overwhelmed, exhausted, disoriented, really fearful about the level of the polycrisis and the level of adaptive challenge that they're facing. And we decided that we perhaps had a unique context that had some urgency in which we could offer some counsel about what we think is really happening, some deeper diagnostic information about what addressing these challenges will require of leaders and organizations that want to be future ready, and maybe some spiritual nurturing that we could offer a reader to encourage them and to plant seeds of hope at a very difficult time. Nicholas, what would you add?
Yeah, please, Nicholas.
Yes, I mean, I concur, of course, with every word of that. And I would add that it's also a response to these times, because I think we both believe that humanity is at an extraordinary moment, which is deeply challenging. And at the same time, I'm always mindful, and there is a chapter in the book about how this time was foreseen and predicted by many of the old wisdom traditions, which is remarkable in itself. And they saw that we were going to arrive at what looks like a very dark time, which we're clearly in, and that at the same time, it's a real junction point. So that's why we talk about the need to revision leadership in a way that sits in a much bigger palette of thought, perception, and sensing. So, yeah, that's my also why did we write now?
Thank you for that, Nicholas. I mean, before we go deeper into the content of the book, I just wanted to talk about the writing of it for a brief while. I mean, our listeners are always interested in the writing experience of our authors. Leading in Chaos is written in a rather interesting and different format as a kind of collection of engaging essays. So can I ask you, Amy, why you both chose that style and what was the writing process like for you?
Yeah, I think there are two reasons. The book is written in very little essays, short essays. And there's two reasons for that. One, everybody we're writing for, leaders, people running organizations, cultural creatives contributing to the world, are time compressed and information saturated. And so we wanted to make the book very digestible and accessible for people with very busy lives to still benefit from the book's counsel. But I think more importantly, each of the essays is really essential. And one of the pandemics in society right now is a pandemic of superficiality or bite-sized information. And we really wanted to write what was profound and super concise so that people could let it move them. And the book is really intended to be the kind of thing where you read one or two chapters a day or a week or even a month, and let it touch your heart profoundly. It's not a book where you sit down and you read it cover to cover in a weekend, and it's not meant to be. It's meant to be something you walk with and that c accompanies you in a deep inner journey.
No, thank you for that reasoning, Amy. Yeah.
Yes, I'd like to add also that
Please.
for at least a year before we started, people kept asking me, when is the next book coming? And I kind of knew there was another book, but a part of me just either wasn't ready and couldn't quite face the process of 2 or 3 years of writing. And then there was a period in the spring when I took a kind of retreat. And each day I started getting these, what I call downloads of shorter essays. And I remember writing to Alec at that, I'd written about five and I was really excited. And I said, how soon can you publish a new book? Because I felt they were like arriving every day. And you said, well, we could. And then Amy and I've always greatly admired Amy's writing. And we were together, I think it was in May. And we suddenly realized, what if we put our writings together? What an incredible expansion of the field of thought leadership. So that's how the book was born. And actually we quite quickly assembled all the pieces we had. And then it's been a process of refining and organizing. And all I can say is that it's been a remarkably joyful and easy process, unlike the first book, which was kind of, 2 or 3 years of labor in a way.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
we, like Amy, we really, I mean, it is a book to open anywhere. And I find that very powerful as well. It's both poetic and very pragmatic. So someone could read one chapter and it would spark a very creative process in them. And they could read another chapter and be like, oh, okay, I need to do something different now.
Yeah, no, I think the two of you made quite a formidable team, especially in terms of the thinking behind the book. I just wanted to go back to you, Nicholas, if you don't mind. I mean, your first book was entitled Leader as Healer, and it was a very successful and influential book, having won the overall Best Business Book of the Year in 2023. How would you compare Leader as Healer with yours and Amy's new book, Leading in Chaos?
Thank you, Martin. I think it's very simple in a way. I would say that, Leader as Healer, as the subtitle suggested, introduced a new paradigm. And Leading in Chaos really outlines the depth architecture of the new paradigm in much more detail. I think it's more radical, it's more challenging, and I think it really, as we've seen in a way from the response, it touches the nerve of where we are now. So I see it as an ideal kind of follow-on, actually, and all the more grateful that Amy could. We could weave our work together in such a rich way.
Sorry, Nicholas, just going back to you again. Do you think much has changed since Leader as Healer was published, or are we still very much in the same place?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I think some things are absolutely the same, namely that we've still normalized a certain way of functioning that, as I pointed out in the first book, is extremely limited because it's so dominated by linear thinking and so excludes all our other intelligences and sensibilities. That's the same. However, I think the stakes are much, much higher now. So that is a big difference. We're in a time where local and global systems are just more and more fragile. And that wasn't the case 3 or 4 years ago. So on the one hand, things are very similar, and on the other hand, they're quite urgently different.
I understand. Yeah. I just
Martin,
wanted to
I would just
please
add
go
one thing.
ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Amy.
The book cover has an image of the atomic scientist's clock at 5 minutes to midnight, which the doomsday clock has been at metaphorically symbolizing the point at which humanity can no longer sustain itself on life for a very, very long time. And just last Tuesday, quite alarmingly, they announced that they've moved the clock to 85 seconds to midnight. So when you ask what's different now, I think the level of threat, the choice point, inflection point that we're on in humanity about finally addressing the things that have gone buried and unseen and unaddressed for so long, it couldn't be more urgent. And I think both of us feel profoundly inspired to make a contribution to evoking the restorative conversation, the alignment conversation, the ethical conversation, and putting it in the center of the boardroom, because of that.
I actually just wanted to continue with along that line in terms of what you think are the main challenges that business leaders are facing today. Maybe Nicholas, you could start that.
Well, I think the simplest one we could say, because we hear it so often, is a statement which says the old playbooks are not quite working anymore. And there is a panic in that, there is a lostness, because the ways that have taken people so far are suddenly just not functioning. It's like we were building a house with certain tools, which we didn't think were perfect by any means, but they kind of worked. But the walls are so fluid now that the tools that were being used are just not working. So I think that is really calling. That's why we feel this is a time for a revisioning of leadership. That it's, and you know, we can talk about that the way we talk about next practice rather than best practice. And therefore, the limitations of linear rational thinking are more clear than ever, because before they were kind of working up to a point, but they're not working now.
Yeah, indeed. Amy, would you like to add anything to that in terms of that main challenges that business leaders are facing at the moment?
Maybe just to say that when there is a level of increased uncertainty and ambiguity and complexity and strain that touches for many, many people on the parts of themselves that are already hurt and fragmented. So Thomas and Nicholas and I both have studied with Thomas Hubl, and we both take very seriously the notion of untreated and unhealed trauma in the workplace as a problem for team dynamics, as a problem for organizational culture, as a challenge to leadership resiliency. And so I think one of the things that people are having to grapple with or starting to realize that they ought to be addressing in the workplace is a mandate for healing and for creating safe spaces and purposeful spaces where people can look at early childhood experience that's resonating with the current context and getting evoked and destabilized by the current context, and do some important integration work, trust building work, vulnerable conversations among team members where they share their life stories and they share the things that they're provoked by and reactive to. And then they can really be support for one another as they try to lead in this very demanding context.
That's so interesting. I mean, Amy, just going back to you again. I mean, in the book, you write that we need a next practice in leadership. I mean, could you perhaps explain what that next practice is and why we need it?
Sure. Thank you for the question, Martin. Most workplaces are built on a technological or industrial view of the workforce, which is largely, as Nicholas already alluded to, left brain intellectual thinking processes that are very disembodied, not emotional. They don't build relational fabric and interdependence, and they're not designed to evoke creativity and the poetics and inspiration. So, absent all of that, the workplace becomes a place where people are very numb, people are very isolated, people are trying really hard to be resilient and autonomous and not need anything. And it's not possible. We all need each other, and we're all emotionally vulnerable, and we all want to feel we have a sense of purpose and meaning making to our daily lives. So the best practices in leadership development on which we are building gratefully all point to coaching or team intervention or organizational leadership work that puts a very strong focus on the mindsets or paradigms or mental models that people are bringing to the work, their work, which was already an evolution from the earlier focus on just behavioral change or cognitive behavioral change. And in next practice, Nicholas and I are really pointing to, as are both of our firms, the need to help people have practices for contemplation and reflection and stillness and white space, practices for somatics and embodiment and vitality, practices for rest and renewal, practices for emotional intimacy and healing in the workplace, and to create what we call nests or affinity groups where people can really support each other in their journeys, both personally and professionally. And also to introduce into the corporate life the idea of tapping into artistry and poetry and music and dance and symbology and all kinds of other modalities that create the kind of context in which people can innovate together and work really hard together, but fueled by joy rather than fueled by exhaustion.
Is this what you mean by the journey of self-discovery and self-mastery, which a large part of this book refers to? Nicholas, maybe you could.
Yeah, I want to also just add something to what Amy said, because there's a chapter in the book about the difference between wellness and transformation. Wellness has become something like a $6 trillion business worldwide, and it's good. I mean, it's very, very good. And there is a distinction when we talk about transformation. We could say that wellness is about how can my existing identity structure function better. And obviously, there's huge value in that. Transformation, which we are part of, is a different ball game, because we're saying that identity structure actually needs to be transformed, not simply upgraded from within it. And that's where we draw on, the traditions of spiritual development, the new work of trauma-informed leadership, because these help the identity that we are expand into an infinitely bigger playing field. And we're very convinced that that's what's needed to meet the challenges that we're facing now. So it's an important perspective that. So, and it's not that I would say wellness is included within transformation, but not the other way around.
Interesting. I mean, actually, I just wanted to ask you. I mean, obviously, there are many leaders who are not familiar with these practices, let's say. When you do encounter leaders who are less familiar, how do you help them to make that leap, I suppose, into this next practice?
I do it by presenting in a very simple way. I mean, it's just something one learns over many conversations. Even, for example, I might start a group process by asking people whether they know what the experience of flow is. And everyone does. Everyone does. And then we say, well, how does it feel? Well, connected, energized, creative, etc., etc. And then I might say, well, what percentage of each day do you live in that flow? And heads drop because it's kind of 5%. Okay, so now we already understand that we've normalized that. And then the actually leader as healer is very useful in that way, being and doing. So I start always by presenting the territory in a way that pretty much everyone can agree with. And then we can gradually introduce the idea of the trauma-informed work. It's not difficult for people to understand. It can be difficult to start engaging with it. But on a cognitive level, it's kind of fairly obvious when you talk about we've all been hurt, and you can explain exactly how that happens. We were born into lineages that were also carrying hurts that were not fully addressed. It's not rocket science, if you see what I mean.
Exactly.
So, on a cognitive level, I think it's quite easy to get people on board. And that then sets the ground. Then it becomes a question of can we create enough safety where it's okay to be vulnerable?
Yes.
Because at first, because that's our culture, I often meet, certainly in a business school, I kind of meet crossed arm. We don't do vulnerability. Okay, no, I understand. I understand. No judgment. No judgment. And then, over a course of 2 or 3 days, someone takes a step, and then suddenly people begin to understand how rich it is to be what we call vulnerable, and what a relief it is to suddenly allow a flow, often of emotion that's been held inside for months, sometimes years, and suddenly people feel so connected to each other, and suddenly they have amazing new ideas. And so the whole thing starts to kind of become more obvious. Why are we doing this? And I would say if we don't do this, we will continue to have boardrooms full of 5-year-olds, meaning making big decisions that are being triggered by unintegrated 5-year-old trauma. That is not a metaphor. That is a fact.
Interesting. This is the part of your work that I've always found very, interesting, Nicholas. Amy, do you have anything to that?
What I see is that people are very easily able to name the transformational capabilities that are needed now, the need to innovate, the need to collaborate across a whole system, the need to experiment, the need to learn from failure, the need to sense make in a new level. And when you name all of that and you ask them, how would a quality of fear or a quality of walled offness or a quality of mistrust get in the way of those things? It becomes almost immediately obvious that we now need to have a workplace that has much more humanity in it and much more intimacy in it in order to make those mindsets permanent and sustainable under high heat, as Nicholas is saying. Otherwise, we are going to walk around with a level of dysfunction, distancing, self-protection, ambition that's not fueled by purpose, but that's fueled by trying to fill a void inside yourself. And all of that we can see writ large is coming at a very high cost to the moral possibility of a business doing something that matters.
Absolutely. Please, Nicholas.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I want to add, because one of the questions I think is, why is inner development so important? So, a foundational principle of our work is that reality is 100% subjective. So, in much development or coaching, we talk about fixing something out there. And we're saying, actually, if we first work to bring in here into more coherence, the whole way you think and feel about out there changes. That is a game-changing truth. And here's a simple way of presenting it. You walk down a street in your city or town, and it's a street, and you look at it, and you go into a gym or a yoga class, you do an hour of deep body work, you come out to that same street, but it's not the same. You're feeling it in a totally new way. It's not fixed out there. Everything depends on what's happening inside us. And most of the time, I would say, we have a tendency to try and fix out there as a way not to look inside. Because it's challenging to look inside. And yet, it's more than essential. It's the foundation. And, some of the leaders I work with have an extraordinary willingness to really look deep inside.
Indeed.
There's a number of chapters in the book that really point at the cost of not doing the inner work. For example, what happens when everybody in the team is really polarized and siloed, and they can't find a way to have some common ground or to adopt multiple perspectives other than their own? That's an example of something you could mediate endlessly on a team as an interventionist, or you could teach people how to have a cognitive flexibility and fluidity, how to have curiosity, how to hold multiple points of view with the same legitimacy and interest in what they might be missing. That's a very different intervention. And the unitive consciousness will automatically start to see, think synergistically and see commonalities and look to polar parallel contexts and be able to import information. So all of this is about developing the inner muscles. Nicholas mentioned coherence, but there's also adaptability and there's also humility and many other mature qualities that the book points to very specifically as essential inner capacities that are needed for this time.
Or when you're having a big strategic meeting in a team and it's getting very stark and there's fractiousness, and the leader who has done enough of their own development says, "Hey, just a minute, let's pay attention to how we're all feeling right now."
And how we're speaking to each other. Yeah.
And unconditionally, not "I feel good." No, maybe you feel really scared, maybe you're really angry. Let's make a big enough space together to really allow all of that, no judgment. Now, I've seen when teams do that, the whole thing changes after that. As Amy said, we could try and fix that out there, or we could do a much deeper work in here, from which everything changes.
I want to point to just one other quality that I think we talk a lot about in the book, which is exponential imagination. The time that we're in is not going to unfold as linear change that you can predict, that's incremental, that you can constantly sort of make micro adjustments in order to fit, continue to adapt yourself. This is going to be a time of catalytic change. And so people need to start to cultivate the ability to imagine worlds very different and very vastly different than what they have today. And that's a process of imagination, of intuition, of sensing. And it also requires a quality of mutual conversation and quiet and contemplation. In order to be able to perceive, as Nicholas said earlier, to perceive more widely and to perceive more novelly. And I think the book is going to be an essential handbook for innovation in a time of constant change.
Yeah, and just to, you see, once Amy and I start, we'll keep. Because just to build on that, I think, well, I'm sure actually, one of the biggest thresholds that every leader is facing now is having to lessen their tight grip on control. Creativity is not something we do. Creativity is something that comes when we are available. Every artist knows that. And by the way, most scientists know that as well. It's not a thing you sit and do. So this in itself means I'm willing to be in the uncertainty without rushing to fix it. And if I'm scared, I need to just feel that because the fear will pass once I feel it. I need to be with unknowing, and we need to sit together and cultivate sometimes this waiting, but not a dormant waiting, an available waiting. This is known in the artistic world, obviously. Beethoven said he used to hear music when he was walking. Carlos Santana says, "I need to turn off the radio, turn off the TV, be silent, and then I start to hear a melody." These are new capacities. They have nothing to do with control. And that can be scary at first because we're so used to trying to have a tight grip on the steering wheel. That's not working anymore. It's not working, and it won't work.
So leaders who develop these capacities of consciousness clearly will create these, immense impacts on their employees and on their overall business, it seems, which is a fascinating insight. I mean, finally, I wanted to ask you both, what impact do you hope Leading in Chaos will have on its readers in today's business world? Maybe not just business, but in world in general. Perhaps Amy, you could begin here.
The book closes with a prayer that Nicholas and I make, which is really that our hope is that the book will inspire people, will call them to take a meaningful journey into opening their heart and metabolizing and healing and integrating what's unfinished in their inner storehouse of lived experience, and thereby liberate them to look around freshly and make the widest possible contribution to move from a desire to get more stuff and accumulate more prestige and succeed for their own egoistic needs to a state where they have enough self-blessing to really ask questions about contribution and service. We're really hoping that the book is a book that calls people to their highest at a moment when the world desperately needs us to contribute our voices, our hands, our love, and to listen deeply of what's being asked of us.
Quite understand. Nicholas, how would you like to add to that?
Yes, I mean, not very much to add to that. I really hope the book will touch people deeply, will inspire people deeply, and will also serve to help outline a path for people, which I would call a kind of path of activation. We need leaders now who can stand very still in the middle of the storm, and who develop a kind of unshakability, which is not what we previously thought of as strong. It's a much deeper inner quality. So that is a process that comes through the kind of development we're speaking of in the book. And I really hope and believe that it will be an enormous resource for everyone who reads the book.
One thing to maybe add is that the book is predicated on two pillars of engagement. One, a healing path, which we very much hope the book will be a guide and a architecture of how people can do some deep healing work and transformational work on themselves. And the other is awakening, which I think is a call to all of us to pay attention to the moment we're in and the possibility before us uniquely at this time.
Yes. Well, Amy and Nicholas, this has been such an interesting conversation with you both. I wish you could last longer. Thank you so much for being with Lid Radio today. It just leaves me to congratulate you both on the publication of your new book, Leading in Chaos, and to wish that the book will fulfill the hopes that you have for it. Thank you, Amy Elizabeth Fox and Nicholas Jani.
Thank you, Martin, and all at Lid for your wonderful support. It's been fantastic to engage with you for a second time.
Thank you, Martin, and I
Thank
share Nicholas's gratitude to everyone at LID. It's just been a tremendous project.
Thank you so much for working with us. We look forward to the publication of the book.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lid Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lid Radio Podcast.